go to joelstrumpet.com. That's joelstrumpet.com. Our guest tonight, Mr. Joel Richardson, New York Times bestselling author, filmmaker, teacher, husband, father. If you go there and go to the store section for his books, grab the three books that he's got, grab the bundle, and educate yourself. There's so much information. But also, take a look in the media section. You'll see Joel Richardson on with Glenn Beck, and it's against that backdrop when he, you may remember this on Fox News, where Mr. Richardson compares the Islamic eschatology, or the Islamic end times, with the Christian end times, the Bible versus the Quran, or the ideologies or the beliefs, and they're mirror opposites. I guess I would describe it that way. But take a look at the media that Mr. Richardson has been so generous to offer all of us, and it's against that backdrop which we're having this conversation. And then, of course, his book, The Islamic Antichrist. But Mr. Richardson, thanks for holding it. And also, I want to lead this hour off by, you mentioned the elections and the election of Donald Trump. I'm not sure we're done totally with Obama, but let's move ahead a little bit against the backdrop of what Islam teaches and what Christianity teaches. Against that backdrop, I want to ask you, with a Trump presidency, the Trump foreign policy, or National Security Advisor General Michael Flynn, controversial as he might be or is, having attachments to lobbyist groups and or lobby group that has attachments to Turkey, perhaps interest in Turkey, He recently gave this wonderful endorsement of Turkey and Erdogan. What are we looking at here? Are we looking at a blindness? Are we looking at a bias? Are we looking at something even worse?
This is a good question. And, you know, I've expressed my very strong concern. Now, to be clear, I voted for Donald Trump, and I'm rooting for him as a Christian. I'm praying for him to continue to put wise counselors around himself. Some of his choices have been fantastic, and I've been very encouraged. I had the chance to meet Mike Pence a few weeks ago, was very impressed with Pence. Just couldn't be more happy that he's the VP pick. Mm-hmm. With Michael Flynn, it's one of these that could go either way, and I've expressed that I think he should actually be let go. I'm willing to potentially reconsider that, but let me just express some of the reasons that I've had for concern. In light of all that we've just talked about, again, you know, President Erdogan in Turkey, he's been giving sanctuary to Ismail Haniyeh, the two leaders of Hamas, you know, who the terrorist organization, terrorist leaders, they've been living the past several years, these multi, possibly billionaires, they've been living in Turkey. Erdogan's been giving them refuge. You know, you could go on and on and on about all of the reasons why Erdogan is not someone you should be praising. Well, on the very day of the election, retired Lieutenant General Michael Flynn writes this fairly strong opinion piece for an op-ed piece for The Hill. And in that, he praises Erdogan as our true friend, someone who really needs our help. And he's arguing for extraditing Fethullah Gulen, the fellow that we talked about earlier, that's the Islamist preacher that lives in Pennsylvania. And I don't have a problem with extraditing Gulen. I have no... appreciation for him. I would say Flynn expresses some ignorance on the topic. He talks about Gulen as if he's an Osama bin Laden. Now, he is an Islamist. He wants to see Islamic government, but he has to understand that the Turkish version of that is much different. You know, Gulen's vision of a Turkish Islamist government is much, much, much different than Osama bin Laden. So his comparison of Gulen as a terrorist, he's not a terrorist. The Turkish model and method to attain the caliphate is very, very different than the Sunni Saudi, Wahhabi, Salafi, you know, Osama bin Laden, ISIS sort of model. So he makes a lot of statements that I go, you know, and listen, you know, he deserves my respect. You know, someone who has served the military deserves all of our respect. And so I don't mean to be condescending in any way, but for someone who claims to be such an expert, and there's no question he has far more military experience than myself, etc., but he makes a lot of beginner's mistakes. He makes a lot of just factual errors. The fact that he's praising Erdogan is greatly concerning, particularly in light of the fact that he does have a business called Flynn Intel, and it is a lobby. It is a lobby organization. They're registered as a lobby group with Congress. The people on staff are registered lobbyists, and he has recently cut a fairly lucrative contract with a Turkish businessman. When the coup was unfolding, Flynn was at an Act for America meeting, Americans Against the Islamization of America. I'm not sure what the acronym stands for, AAC. In any case, and he was given a speech, and he was speaking of the coup as if it was a positive thing. Well, that, you know, of course, that was good. But here we are just a few months later, and he's speaking in glowing terms about Erdogan. So that right there is very, very concerning. Not just that he's praising a dictator, not that he's praising a man who is supporting these Hamas leaders, who is himself one of the primary supporters behind ISIS. You know, I mean, just sort of open secret within the intelligence community, but also just some of the fairly ignorant statements that he makes. That's also one of my concerns. And so, you know, with the past 8 years under Obama, we have just this administration that wouldn't even acknowledge Islamic terrorism, just, you know, to the frustration of everyone who is aware of and understand what's unfolding. And that drove us nuts. But I'm also concerned that, you know, and I'm reading through The Field of Fight right now, General Flynn's book, and I'm about halfway through today. It's actually a very easy book to read. And I've yet to sort of, you know, wrap up my final conclusions here. But he tends to be taking just a completely contrarian approach to Obama's approach. And normally we would say, well, that's good. But, you know, that's not always the case. You know, you don't just take the exact 180-degree opposite perspective just because Obama was wrong. I think we need someone who acknowledges Islamic terrorism. They acknowledge the threat. They acknowledge the danger. But they also need to acknowledge that not every Muslim out there wants to enslave or kill us. And he makes statements like that. Back in February, he retweeted some video, which, you know, some people might like it. But, you know, he retweets this video, and he wrote, "Fear of Muslims is rational." Now, fear of Islamists, fear of terrorists, fear of jihadis, you could say that's rational. But fear of all Muslims is not rational. As a Christian, there is a lot of fear out there. And a lot of the Christian, you know, the church is infected by the fear. We're not to be people of fear. We're to be, as I said, wise as serpents, gentle as doves. We're to be aware of the threat and the danger. But we're not to be people that fear every Muslim that's out there, because the majority of Muslims, and again, I've been involved in outreach and dialogue with Muslims for years, I can tell you they tend to be far more ignorant of their religion than most Christians are. They tend to be far more ignorant of the Quran than most Christians are of the Bible, and that's saying a lot. So, you know, we need someone that is aware of the danger, aware of the threat, but we need somebody that has wisdom. And you know, that's not to say that Obama's approach was wise. That was just, it was ludicrous. But we need somebody that has a little bit more tact. So, you know, there's just a handful of red flags with General Flynn. I personally think there are a handful of other military leaders, different folks out there that would be far better qualified. I don't mean in terms of experience, but just in terms of their approach than General Flynn. So those are my concerns. Don't confuse that with the crazy, you know, attacks against Trump by the left-wing media. It's just that as a Christian, I voted for Trump, and I believe it's our responsibility to now hold his feet to the fire, to hold him accountable, and to pray for and push for strong, wise, godly, you know, informed men that would come around him and give Trump wise counsel. Because, you know, and I've said this before, I don't think that Trump, I don't think he's had a lot of people that have told him no throughout his life. I think he's been surrounded with a lot of yes men, and we need some strong people that will come around him that will give him solid advice. So
I hope that
is received.
Well, you know, and everything you said there, I agree with, and some people mistake my my enthusiasm to really fight the terrorist threat, the Islamic terrorist threat, to acknowledge and fight that with the indictment of all Muslims. But one thing you said there, and I have to go back to this because I think this is something, this is a mindset of a lot of Americans. And I'm a Trump supporter as well, and I voted for him, and I'm glad he's in. The alternative would have been devastating, in my view. But having said all of that, when you look at this, the ideology of Islam, we know it is, to me, I've often described Islam as a cult. Okay, now those are my words. But you've got a large segment of the Islamic population, and I just want to drive this home, who really don't know. I mean, they're Muslims, yes, but they really don't. They're not adherent to the strict Muslim faith. And I think that's important to understand. You know, the Christians who are ignorant of the Christianity, and I'm painting with a broad brush here, but the ignorance on the Christian side is nothing compared, as you said, to the ignorance on the Muslim side. Is that kind of true? I mean, you know, or is that too simplistic, I guess?
Yeah, no, it's absolutely true. It's absolutely true. And there's many reasons for that. One of which is that throughout much of the Islamic world, Arabic is one of the least spoken languages. And yet the Quran is written in Arabic, and many Muslims will actually even memorize the Quran, but they memorize it in Arabic. Many of them who don't speak Arabic, they learn how to say the words, and yet they don't know what they're saying. And so, you know, Muslims really believe that the Arabic is sort of the divine language. And so in nations like Indonesia or Pakistan or India, places where they don't speak Arabic, many Muslims only study the Quran in Arabic. And so that right there is part of the reason. But, you know, also Islam, just, you know, let's say like the Catholicism or, you know, any other sort of major religion, it's a very culturally embedded reality. So you have people that are atheists, but they would call themselves Muslims, because they grew up Muslim, but yet they don't even believe in God. The Pew Research Firm did a very thorough study on Islamic doctrine and what they believe several years ago, and it was like, you know, on average about 90% believed in heaven and hell and things like that. And you go, wait a minute, how can you say you don't believe in heaven or hell and still call yourself a Muslim? Well, because they identify culturally as Muslims, but not necessarily religiously. And so, yeah, there's no question. I mean, you know, I was in Iraq just several weeks ago, in northern Iraq, in the Kurdish areas. And, you know, the Kurds, they're Sunni Muslims, and there are some that are more devout than others. But, I mean, they are some of the greatest people. You know, I've got many, many families that live there with their kids, American families, missionaries. They live among the Kurdish Muslims with their families, with their little babies, and you know, without any fear. These are some fantastic people. And so, you know, I find most of the people that cast every single Muslim as somebody that just wants to behead you when they have the right opportunity, I find that most of them don't actually know Muslims. And right. Again, to be clear, you're talking to the guy that wrote the book, The Islamic Antichrist. You know, I'm not someone who is soft on Islam. I understand the dangers, the threats, the realities, but we need to be realistic in our approach.
Exactly. And that's, I think there's a lot of ignorance out there. Ignorance is not, I'm not being pejorative here when I say that, but truly a lot of ignorance with respect to with Islam and even within Christianity. So I understand that. This might be a good time to ask you this question. We're getting just inundated with emails from listener questions, and I want to thank Jackie for bringing this to my attention. This represents actually Gary listening live from England, from the UK, represents probably a dozen or so questions. Thank you, Jackie, for bringing this to my attention. About the difference, since we're talking about this, Gary and others want to know the difference between, and I know you addressed this, but and this is basic, but if we can just take a step back here. He writes, I'm confused, and I know others are, Gary, about the difference between the Islam of Saudi Arabia, that form of Islam versus the Islamic State form of Islam. What's the difference there? He writes, I'm confused. I can't tell the difference. And if you could help me out on this, I'd appreciate it. And Gary from UK and others as well. Thanks for the question. Joel, what is the difference?
Sure. Well, you know, in the same way that within Christianity, you know, if you walk into a Black Baptist church in Charlotte, North Carolina versus a Pentecostal church in Alabama versus a Baptist church in Michigan or a Reformed church in Minneapolis, you know, there's many different kinds of Christianity. Well, likewise with Islam. There's many different kinds of Islam. Now, the Sunnis are the majority sect. They make up about 87% of the Islamic world. Among the Sunnis, you have a few different sort of schools of thought. One of the schools I'm calling Saudi Arabian Islam. You could call it Wahhabism. You could, sometimes they call it Salafism. They're a little bit different, but they're basically the same thing. And this is a school of thought that is founded on the teachings of a guy named Ibn Taymiyyah and Ibn al-Wahhab. These are two guys from Saudi Arabia. And this is the Islam of Al-Qaeda. This is the Islam of ISIS. This is the Islam largely of the Muslim Brotherhood, although they tend to be a little bit different. They're students of these Egyptian preachers, Sayyid Qutb and Hassan al-Banna. But this is, you know, a much more jihad-oriented approach. Some of these other Islamist groups in Pakistan and India, Jamaat al-Islamiyya and Taglibi Jamaat, that they all sort of have these Islamist fathers, these thinkers that they look to. And usually their conclusion was that the reason Islam was not prospering, Muslims were not devout enough, and they needed to use jihad, they needed to use violence to establish their end goals. Okay, now in Turkey, the primary Islamist father of Turkey today is a guy named Said al-Nursi, and then his student was Fethullah Gulen. Okay, so these are the two guys that sort of articulate and have fashioned sort of the thinkers behind Turkish Islam. Turkish Islam took a different approach. They looked at the weakening of the Islamic world, and then rather than following the model of the Saudis, they said, no, we need to approach Islam in a way that's much more cultured, much more geared towards science and progress and modernity. They use things like interfaith dialogue, a lot of service. And so it's a kind of Islam that is much more Western friendly. I'll call it Islam decaffeinated, you know, or Islam light. But it's a kind of Islam that in order to confront the West, they weren't going to use jihad and violence. Rather, they were going to create an Islam that we would welcome with open arms. We would roll the red carpet out and say, this is wonderful. This is what we've been waiting for. And so, you know, Turkish Islam, again, they have the same end goals. They want to control the world. They want to see Islam be supreme and so forth. But they have a very different vision of what that looks like. The Turkish model tends to be, you know, much more moderate, much more peaceful and so forth. There's both elements of violence in both. But the Saudi Arabian version, it's a much more purist and a much more violent and a much more dangerous form of Islam. So I hope that's helpful.
Indeed it is. So what are we doing as a nation supporting, and why is Saudi Arabia our ally?
You know, I just finished a book that will be out just after the turn of the year, and I deal extensively with the Saudi influence in Washington. And, you know, a lot of people are unaware. They know that there's a large Saudi influence in Washington. But I actually make the case that Saudi Arabia is hands down the single greatest foreign influence in Washington. It is the single greatest propaganda outreach in the history of mankind. When we look at the money that Saudi Arabia has spent over the past 40-plus years to spread the most violent, the most intolerant, the most hateful form of Islam that has ever existed again, Wahhabism or Salafism. No propaganda, no evangelistic campaign, nothing in the history of mankind compares to the amount of money that the Saudis have spent to spread this radical form of Islam. If there is a mosque in your city, there's a 95% chance that it was built and paid for by the Saudi government. And you go, how can that be? Well, you look at the Clintons. How much money did they receive from the Saudis? Well, it was close to $40 million. Well, is that because the Saudis are just these great philanthropists? They just really believe in the Clinton initiative? No, they were buying favors. They were trying to buy influence. Well, you go, is it just the Democrats? You know, there's all kinds of evidence that Barack Obama was groomed early by some Saudis, and that he perhaps had his education paid for by the Saudis. You can go back to Jimmy Carter. He was bought and paid for by the Saudis, and he ended up becoming one of the most virulent anti-Semites. And here's an American president, a Nobel laureate, and he's writing these anti-Israel diatribes that were, you know, they were so bad that people who had been on his board for 30 years were dropping off, saying this was just a dishonest plagiarism, you know, filled with dishonest fake quotes and so forth. And you go, okay, well, so those Democrats are all corrupt. And then you look at the Bushes. If you take all the money that has been received by the Clintons, by Obama, by Carter, it doesn't even compare. It's not even a fraction of the amount of money that the Bushes have received from the Saudis. And so it doesn't matter, Republican, Democrat, every American president for the past generation has been in the back pocket of the Saudis. The money that they have buys influence.
Yeah, I mean, as an investigator, 101, you follow the money. And that's what it's all about, the money. And in this case, too, the money and the energy. In terms of cheap energy, cheap oil, right? That's the basis of, I mean, as you pointed out earlier, with Turkey, the pipelines, the Syria, the pipelines, it all comes down to that, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's the lifeblood of the Western world. It's the lifeblood of, you know, the industrial society. And, you know, it's just every time we fill up our car, we're putting money into one of the most vile terrorist supporting entities in the history of mankind. And, you know, again, everybody has their price. Everyone has their price. And I'd like to say, you know, that it has only affected one side, but it has affected everybody. There's not a single lobby. You can say, you know, you can't name a bank. You can't name international bankers. And you go, wait a minute, bankers. The Saudis have outdone them in terms of their corruption of Washington. The numbers, when you look at the numbers, nothing compares. And, you know, why do you put $30 million? Why do you give $100 million to an American president? Well, it's because you expect something in return. That is an investment. And they have gotten a great return on their investment, and unfortunately, it's led to the absolute nightmare that we're seeing in the Middle East right now. That's a direct result of the Saudi lobby in Washington.
Man, this is incredible, folks. Our guest is Joel Richardson. His website, joelstrumpet.com. Visit there, and of course, check out the media section. Check out the store, obviously, where you can order his books by the bundle. That's my advice to you. This man is knowledgeable. I mean, beyond anything. We're so blessed to have him on, and thank you, sir, for coming on, because you are just a wealth of information. Now, the next segment we're going to be talking to you, I'm going to be asking you a lot of questions, really kind of honing in on the Islamic Antichrist aspect, and then asking you, too, about what your passions are. But for the next 2 minutes here, you said you were in Iraq. You were ministering to Muslims, or what? Can you tell me what you're doing in Iraq with respect to your ministry?
So I work with a ministry. It's called FAI, Frontier Alliance International, and we're working with the Kurds. You can, and by the way, I'll just give you the website. It's FAIMission.org. It may be missions. It's either mission or missions.org. We're working with the Kurds, and so right now, of course, the Kurds have been the only ones that have been fighting ISIS Well, I was actually there on September 11th, so that was now 2 months ago.
Mm-hmm.
And we were establishing a medical outreach program. So you had about 10,000 Kurds on the northern front fighting ISIS, you know, ready to take Mosul, and we're there. They're just getting ready to launch. And these 10,000 Kurds, these guys, they're civilian soldiers. You know, they rotate. They leave for a week or two, go back to their houses. These guys had one ambulance.
Wow.
One ambulance and, you know, a few medics and one doctor. And when these guys were getting shot, the ambulance would come from Erbil, which was about 2 hours south, drive up there, pick them up, drive them back. You know, they're bleeding out. Most of the soldiers didn't have any medical training. So what we're doing is establishing a medical outreach there where we're just serving the Kurds because, as I said, I've got several families that are up there, you know, living with the Kurds and reaching them with the gospel. You know, they want to be a gospel witness in their area. And so go, how do you bless your neighbors? Well, the neighbors are fighting ISIS and they're dying. And so sometimes serving Christ is as simple as trying to help your neighbor stay alive and serve them in that way. So, you know, that's what, you know, that's what FAI is doing. And, you know, that's something that you want to support in prayer or finance, you know. And I'm always, there's a few ministries that I'll always say, hey, here's a ministry you can get behind, but you can look them up. In fact, I just posted one of their videos on my website.
Okay.
So if you just go to the first.
Yeah, we will do that. Folks, you're listening to Joel Richardson. We're going to be right back. Thank you, sir. Hang on. For the break, and we'll be right back. Special guest, our guest, Joel Richardson. Go to joelstrumpet.com. That's joelstrumpet.com, and check out the entire website, his articles. In fact, I would urge everyone to look him up on WND, his, especially as we're talking tonight, his article back in September 17th, I believe it was, that appears on WND about Turkey and what's taking place there. The source of the Antichrist by Joel Richardson. And the subtitle, of course, Joel Richardson identifies ominous developments in the former Ottoman Empire. That's sort of the basis of what we're talking about. And then the Islamic Antichrist. Before the break, we were talking about FAI mission. We're going to be getting back to Mr. Richardson and that as well here momentarily. Folks, if you haven't done so already, if you want a great gift to give to others again for the holidays, or if you just want a great read in addition to Mr. Richardson's books, of course, but if you want to delve into the world of really great, thrilling fiction, T.C. Joseph, he takes us into the lives of three families in a world where conspiracy theories and Bible prophecies collide. Now, I was really not a big fan of, you know, fiction in that realm, but T.C. Joseph does a remarkable job in moving through history, recent events, and events just on the horizon that are, I mean, it's just an amazing work. He's got three books. In fact, it's called This Generation Series. It's on Amazon. Book one is Precipice. Book two is Pentecost. And book three, which I have, and I just finished it, is Penance. I'm not going to ruin it for you. It is a fantastic read. And you know what, folks? You can use these books as tools to awaken other people, family members, friends to the perilous times that we face. Folks, go to This Generation Series on Amazon.com. T.C. Joseph's This Generation Series on Amazon. And again, book one, Precipice, book two is Pentecost, and three is Penance. They fit together nicely, and you're going to be pleasantly surprised. Again, a great gift for family members, friends, great reviews by Kirkus and by others, Blue Ink reviews as well. So that's great. Now, right before the break, again, our guest is Joel Richardson. You were talking about that being in Iraq, and I noticed that, and by the way, FAI is Faith I'm sorry, Faith Alliance International. I'm stumbling myself here. Faith Alliance International. It's FAI.org or FAImission.org. FAImission.org. And I love the, I love the, mission statement there where you're just bringing the gospel to those unengaged. And, it's a wonderful work that you're doing. So I'm going to thank you for that. And certainly you were in Iraq and, were you ducking bombs? I mean, seriously, that sounds like a really trite question, but I mean, my goodness, talk about being on the front lines near Mosul. I mean, goodness.
Well, it, you know, when you're behind, when you're, you know, in the Kurdish areas, it's relatively stable. And so, you know, again, we were there getting permission from some of the generals up there on the northern front to establish the medical outreach, as well as meeting with some of the leaders from, I'm sure you're familiar with the Yazidi peoples.
Sure.
Who, you know, they're just waking up to the fact that in August of 2014, when ISIS swept across, and, well, it was in June, but then it was in August that they took Mount Shingal, that it was a massacre that for the Yazidi people, there's about 400,000 of them in Iraq, about 600,000 globally. This was the equivalent of their Holocaust. There's tens of thousands, perhaps as many as 100,000, were wiped out, and now they're finding all these mass graves. And, you know, here's this sort of very unusual kind of pagan, ancient Middle Eastern pagan peoples that lived up there in northern Iraq. A lot of people weren't familiar with them before ISIS. And just a few years ago, these missions organizations said these people are completely unreached, unengaged with the gospel. You know, they didn't have any Christians who were ministering among them, you know, giving them the invitation to the feast and telling them about Jesus and this sort of thing. And then this terrible tragedy happens. And, you know, as I said, they suffer this massacre. And now it's a few years later, all of the NGOs are pulling out because this is an old crisis. And so, you know, we have the opportunity also to minister to the Yazidis, and you know, the doors are opening, and just to serve them in this time, and essentially documenting, you know, in a similar way to Steven Spielberg documenting all of these World War II Holocaust survivors that are now passing away. He's been filming and archiving all of their stories. You know, there's got folks over there that are collecting DNA samples from these girls that they're rescuing from ISIS and interviewing the survivors and documenting as much evidence to present to the International Criminal Court, because these guys are now going back to Europe. And, you know, they were involved in this, and they're sleeking right back into England and Europe and France. And not many people are actually there helping them. So, you know, there's a saying, it's a proverb that says the Kurds have no friends but the mountains. They've been mistreated by the Arabs, by the Turks, by the Persians. They've been mistreated by everyone. And we're saying we believe that there is one who's a better friend than mountains. And so we're trying to be his ambassadors. And that's what's going on in northern Iraq. But no, you know, it was, wow. In fact, one day we actually went swimming. We went swimming in Lake Mosul.
Really?
No, we weren't ducking any bombs, but now things are obviously a little different with the offensive, for sure.
Okay, so as we drive this home, especially with the Islamic Antichrist in your book, which I would urge everyone to grab a hold of, as we drive this home, we see all of the geopolitical events taking place, the election of 2016 with Trump, the Flynn National Security Advisories, shall we say, all of this, and we're obviously, it seems like we are barreling down this road of end times prophecy pretty quickly. And we're, you know, Christians are looking for answers. I'm reading everything I can, because I do want to know, where's the Antichrist going to come from? I understand, and our audience is really far ahead of the curve, but your, the, presentation you gave on Glenn Beck with respect to, the Islamic, the Mahdi versus, or the Mahdi and the Antichrist may actually be one and the same, for example, and how that compares to Christianity, I guess. So I said all that to say this. Where are we at here? Are you saying watch Turkey for the rise of the Antichrist? Are you saying Erdogan is the Antichrist, or could very well be, based on the criteria of the Christian Bible? Are we at the, help me out here. Are we at the end times?
Well, you know, until just a little over a week ago, I was convinced that the man of sin was Hillary Rodham Clinton. But now I'm having to rethink everything. Just kidding. I don't personally believe that, Erdogan is the Antichrist. I think there are a few specific biblical criteria that he does not match. Daniel 7 and 8 say that he emerges as a little horn or a small horn. He emerges small and he rises to power. I don't think that fits Erdogan. It speaks of him using peace to conquer. I think Erdogan represents the nature of the Antichrist during the latter portion of his career. Boastful, arrogant, you know, he's a perfect model for that. Now, let me just say this, because I know, you know, within biblical prophecy, there's a lot of different opinions out there, whether some say the Antichrist will come from Europe. I'm convinced he will come out of the Islamic world. Listen, we as a church are a city on a hill. We've got watchmen on the wall. We need to have watchmen on the eastern wall, on the western wall. That's what watchmen do. They pay attention to all sides, and they're prayerful. So, you know, I'm not saying abandon the western wall and everybody come over to the eastern wall. I'm saying we need to be paying attention to this. There's very legitimate biblical basis for the idea that the Antichrist would come out of the nations that surround Israel. In fact, that's the overwhelming place that the biblical prophets point to. Now, there are a few different possible scenarios as far as how the Antichrist could emerge. My guess right now, based again on my analysis of the biblical data, is that we will see a major regional war with Iran invading the Middle East. And that match could be lit any day. You know, that's something that could happen any time. And after a period of time, Turkey will respond and crush Iran. And then it's out of that period that the Antichrist will arise from one of the four areas of this sort of new Turkey. I believe there'll be sort of a new expanded Turkey that will break up into four. And out of one of those four will come the Antichrist. And that's, I know I'm just kind of skimming a rock over the surface of that. But I believe he will come from Turkey, but it might not necessarily be the exact Turkey that we have today. Because right. Some passages seem to point to him coming from the area of Syria. Others point to him as coming from the area of Turkey, or at least from, you know, a Turkish entity. And others potentially point to him coming from the area of Iraq. So, you know, it's difficult, and we need to be careful of being overly dogmatic, but I think there is some very strong evidence from him coming from that part of the world. We need to be paying attention, and we need to be peering into the prophets, into the scriptures daily, and then looking out at the world and recognizing the signs as they unfold. But I definitely think that the contours of the landscape, as they were described by the biblical prophets, are coming into very clear focus.
Okay, and very well said, by the way. And that's... You know, I although I was a big proponent of you know, the Antichrist coming out of the UK, for example, the city of London, and I was really, I got to tell you, I was really, and to some extent, still looking at the bloodlines, you know, the tribe aspect, the bloodline aspect of things. You really have gotten me to look at the scriptures for answers through your book, and So I thank you for that, because it's pointing me back to the Bible. I need to ask you this question, because I've often said that Syria, as it is today, and as Syria is to me, is going to be the flashpoint for World War III, for the hot war, for the... Now you're saying, however, Turkey and Iran is going to invade the Middle East. What role does Syria have to play in the end times, or the scenario that you described?
Well, you know, it's funny. I mean, you said that it will be a flashpoint. It already is. I mean, this is, of course, it all began in Tunisia. You know, this young guy, this fruit vendor, lit himself on fire, and you have the Arab Spring, and that inferno, you know, was put out throughout most of the Middle East, but it's still raging in Syria. You know, the UN is calling it the largest human human crisis,
humanitarian crisis.
In human history. I mean, in terms of the number of IDPs, displaced peoples, refugees, this is tremendous. I mean, millions of people displaced living in refugee camps. So the fire, the inferno that's raging there, it's not going out. I mean, this is the thing, you know, I've always wanted to visit Syria. I've never been to Syria. This was a gem of the Middle East, a beautiful Middle Eastern nation. You know, you or I are never going to be able to visit Syria in our lifetimes. Syria will never be what it once was. It is a heap of rubble. And, you know, even after we drive out ISIS, you know, there's still, you know, villages and different things. But, I mean, much of the major cities are just like post-World War II Europe. And so in terms of where, you know, their role that they're going to play, I mean, obviously we've got Isaiah 17, talks about Damascus being turned into a heap of ruins. A lot of people think that that's going to be fulfilled any day. I would always counsel people with regard to that chapter to read the full chapter, because the larger context of these series of oracles in, it's like Isaiah 13 through 21, that's a judgment against Moab, judgment against this one, judgment against Damascus. It's all largely within the context of the day of the Lord. But specifically, Isaiah 17, it also speaks not only of the destruction of Damascus, but it speaks of the ruin of Ephraim. Ephraim is another term for the northern kingdom of Israel versus the southern kingdom of Judah. And so it's really speaking of, let's say, modern-day Galilee. And it says that it's void of people. It's described as like an olive tree, where you only have a couple olives left at the top of the branches after the gleaning, even after the harvest and the gleaning. There's just a couple left here or there, and that's what the people will be like in northern Israel. So in my opinion, the complete destruction of Damascus is probably ultimately going to be fulfilled right at the end, because I don't believe Israel will be in that state, you know, any day soon. I believe that describes the state of Israel at the very end, right before the return of Jesus. But clearly, you know, the battles in the last days will revolve around that general part of the world.
Okay, now in the context that you described, Damascus, ruinous heap, what are you saying with respect to that? If you can expand on that a little bit, because I've always looked at that prophecy to mean that it's either going to get nuked, and I know this is very simplistic, or it's going to become uninhabitable. Is that right? Am I oversimplifying it, or is this? I mean, what does that mean? I mean,
it clearly uses the language of never to be inhabited again. Now, whether that's a nuke, you know, it could be, or whether it's just, you know, the very long, slow, gradual decay that we've seen over the past few years. Of course, you know, there's still parts of Damascus that, you know, people are going to work every day, and they're going to restaurants, and, you know, we don't see that part of it. There's still, you know, millions of people living there and so forth. So we're not there yet. But I guess what I'm saying is I believe that the ultimate destruction of Damascus doesn't actually happen until the very end. Now, you know, prophecies can be difficult. Sometimes one sentence consolidates, you know, 2,000 years. Unto us a son is born, you know, a child is given. The government will be on his shoulders. The increase of his kingdom, there'll be no end. You know, two sentences just covers a few thousand years. So, you know, timing is difficult, but it seems to me that the timing context of that particular chapter would seem to be toward the very end of the tribulation. But again, you know, I could be wrong on that.
Okay. All right. Well, that lays it out pretty well. Here we only have about 10 minutes left of our time together. And again, I thank you so much for your gracious gift of time. Our guest, folks, and if you're joining us late, Joel Richardson, his website, joelstrumpet.com. The one question I had for you in preparation of tonight, I wanted to ask you, of the events of the last, we'll say, this year, 2016, what one event or perhaps series of events in your heart of hearts and your spirit, your prayerful consideration and your research really drove home to you the premise of your book, The Islamic Antichrist? That I mean, if is there any one or two events or series of events that really you stopped and said, "Man, I'm right based on my research," and you know, it's coming. I can see it coming. Is there anything that sticks out in 2016 or everything in 2016?
You know, I would just speak in very general terms, which, you know, the premise of my book, to summarize it, is this: is that the Bible, the context of the Bible, is thoroughly Jerusalem and Israel centric. You know, the whole story revolves around the city of the great king and the land that he promised to Abram and his descendants. And therefore, that's the part of the world where the closer that we get to the return of Jesus and the fulfillment of God's unfolding promised plans, that the principalities, that the demonic powers of the air will rage, and that they will gather the nations against that city. And so for that reason, we would expect the closer that we return to Jesus, the attention of the world to return to the Middle East. So, you know, once we begin with the context that it's all about Israel, you look at the words of the prophets, and they say, you know, I will gather the surrounding nations, the surrounding peoples, I will gather the neighbors down against Jerusalem. Then you go, oh, well, wait a minute, I always thought the Bible was primarily about the United States. You know, I thought, you know, my world revolves around America. I thought, sure, God's world must, you know. So once we understand the context of the scriptures, then you go, okay, this makes sense. And what's becoming clear, not just this year, but over the past several years, is that the attention of the world is once more returning to Israel. It's returning to the Middle East. And this is what we would expect, and this is how the scriptures describe it, is that Jerusalem, it's like a magnet, you know, like a hurricane that pulls everything into its eye. The closer that we return to, the closer that we get to the return of Jesus, the more that the constellation of the nations will be pulled into the controversy of Zion. And that's exactly what we're seeing. So I know I'm speaking in general terms, but it is the return of the attention of the world to the Middle East that is confirming that, you know, this is where it all began. It began in Genesis with the conflict between the children of Abraham, Isaac and Ishmael, Esau and Jacob, and that's where it all ultimately ends. It's not to say that Europe and Asia and, you know, Africa and South America are not relevant, because of course they are,
sure,
but that the head of the spear revolves around the heart of the biblical world, and that's the Middle East.
Wow. Well said. I just have two questions here that we compiled from a multitude of questions from our listening audience, all the way from Australia to Vancouver, British Columbia. Thank you for all of your emails, by the way. The one question here, which seems to represent a number of people: do you believe through the 2016 elections, do you believe that Donald Trump represents, the election of Donald Trump represents a reprieve for the United States prophetically?
You know, I'm not sure. Time will tell. And, you know, I think it's certainly a reprieve from the encroaching, you know, religious intolerance of the left and so on and so forth. Whether that will prove to be good for the church is yet to be seen. You know, I know there's been a lot of prophecies. There's been people saying, you know, this is God's judgment. Others say this is God's blessing. I don't know. I prayerfully voted for Donald Trump, and I tend to think that God is going to do something and shock us all in a good way, but I'm very tentative in that assessment, and I think now is not the time to stop praying. So I'll leave it at that.
And the closing question is this: there have been rumors about our renewed friendship with Israel, and of course the message from Netanyahu to Trump and such. There's a lot of rumors out there, a lot of hubbub about perhaps moving the embassy, American embassy, from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. Do you see that taking place, and if so, would that like cause this cataclysmic shift in the would that just be like a nuke, metaphorically speaking, going off in the Middle East?
Well, you know, they're saying that Huckabee's going to do that, and you know, I certainly hope they do. It could cause all sorts of conflict again with our Islamic quote allies throughout the region. But you know, there's some fights that are worth fighting, and I would put that in the category of one that is. But we'll see. We'll see what happens. I mean, even beyond that, it's been interesting to see the Sanhedrin calling for Trump and Putin to help rebuild the temple. I mean, you know, this thing could end up being bigger than we thought, but we'll cross that bridge when we get there.
Mr. Richardson, I want to thank you so much for your gracious gift of time tonight. Is there, aside from your latest book, which is, when you say late, when I say latest, I mean it came out a year ago, 18 months ago, The Islamic Antichrist. Is there anything else, the bundle that you have at the store, is there anything else that you'd like to, that I failed to mention that you want to mention with respect to your work that you want to showcase?
No, you know, if you're interested in tonight's discussion, then yeah, I have a bundle, which is my book, Mideast Beast, a five-part DVD, The Antichrist, Turkey, and the Coming Caliphate, and then a debate that I had on this very topic of the Islamic versus Roman Antichrist with Dr. Tommy Ice a few months ago. And that's probably the best bundle that would pertain to what we've talked about tonight. But if you click on my store, there's all sorts of resources there.
All right, sounds great. And people can support you there, as well as your ministerial efforts as well. I would urge that. And they can do that. Is that through FAImission.org? Is that how people would do that, or would they do that directly through your website to support your ministry?
If they want to support me, there's a link that says partner. And so click on that. On the top says partner. FAI is a ministry that I work with and I support. If you want to support them and their work in Iraq, the top post on my blog has the information to do that as well.
Perfect. Sir, thank you so much again for your gift of time, and thanks for being our guest. God bless you. Thank you for all you do. And you know what? I got to thank you for really honing my sights on the end time prophetic events with your book, The Islamic Antichrist. God bless you, my friend. Thank you.
Hey, bless you. It was great being on, and be happy to do it again sometime.
Indeed. You have an open invitation. God bless. Folks,
all right,
that was,
bless you.
Joel Richardson from joelstrumpet.org or .com. I gotta tell you, man, what a great man. Well informed, and I mean well informed guy. From his books, incredible works, very biblically based. And what he said about Jerusalem and Israel, concentric. Boy, is that ever true. And it's so easy for us here in the West, meaning America or the UK or Australia, wherever you might be, to really look at prophecy through the lens of the West. But isn't it all about Israel? Isn't it, doesn't it all kind of go back to that land? I do think that, that's what we have to do. We have to expand, or at least we have to look at it through that context. Wow. What a great interview. What a great guy. Well, folks, you're listening to the Hagman and the Hagman Report. Coming up, Stan Deo. What a great segue to Stan Deo. Stan's been talking about this for years, right? I mean, seriously, the Islamic Antichrist, and looking at Turkey and looking at that whole geopolitical area, the situation. So it's a great segue into Stan's time tonight. Stay tuned, folks, for Stan Deo from standeo.com. And of course, always click on the show images page there for relevant images that we're going to be addressing tonight. Stay right where you're at. Come back with Stan.